WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into the Low Tide, your lowdown on all things Alabama sports here on 90.7 The Capstone. Apologies for the false start. The Alabama offense, we were a little slow to get rolling today. I'm Nicholas Persley, joined as always by Joe Schatz. How are we doing?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Obviously it was a rather stressful weekend for Alabama sports in general. So happy we made it here, but looking forward to getting into it.
And Adam Hambright.
Yeah, about the same. I'm doing a little bit better today. Better news out of the Crimson Tide sports teams today than yesterday. I mean, the good news is we did not have a loss, but we'll get into it in a second.
Kind of did.
It felt like one. Speaking of Alabama, USF played in Tampa on Saturday. Alabama comes out with the win 17-3. But I don't know that really anybody considers this to be anything but a win on paper. Alabama was losing in the first quarter, ended the first quarter losing 3-0, tied the game up before halftime 3-3 against USF. To provide some context, this is a team that went 1-11 last season. Granted, they did transfer in like 30-something players, but still, this is a team that won one game.
Yeah. And the new head coach, he was the Tennessee offense coordinator last year. So, they are making some changes, but still, you should not only be winning by 14 points in this game. I don't care, who you are.
And a reminder, this is also a team that in week one lost 41-24 to Western Kentucky. That's the team, I believe, that has the grimace-looking mascot, but just red.
The Hilltopper.
The Hilltopper.
Now, what I will say is, even though we're going to complain about, we're not a college football show like we were last year, but this was a crazy weekend across the board, everybody with, some close games. Texas, who beat Alabama last week, was tied 10-10 in the third quarter against Wyoming, so... Let's just take it easy.
Speaking of, how about Boston College?
Yeah.
Onside kick in the third quarter with a minute to go, and they recover it.
Yes.
Truly.
Trying to spark the comeback.
That was fantastic.
Especially during the red bandana game. That was great.
Yeah.
True. And a much better watch than the awful situation on ABC for the broadcast where...
Oh, yeah. It was high school state championship.
Bear Bryant had a better view than we did watching that game.
True.
Yeah.
Just to fill everybody in, there was a rain delay. It started pouring. The cameramen had to leave their positions, and they weren't cleared to go back, even though the game was still happening. And after the game restarted, ABC still did not want the cameramen in their positions. So you had some fantastic, I don't even know what you'd call that, a nosebleed view. On TV.
It was like if you got like a $5 ticket, that's what you would see.
Yeah. And, they don't have anybody to move the camera, obviously. So you have like one view and then the ball go out of the screen, then it just switches to another camera.
Yeah.
Or they would give you the back of the field one where you're seeing like the whole field where you can't even see anything going on. But I was like, can you just leave it on this just so I can see what the rest of the players are doing?
They put in Ty Simpson. I didn't even know they did that because it was muted on my TV was muted at the time, and it just looked the exact same. I was like, oh, cool, Buckner actually did something, and I'm like, oh, never mind.
It truly was. You might have been better off watching the game with the screen turned off.
Just listen to Chris Stewart.
And honestly, for most fans, you might have been better off not watching the game at all.
Just waking up and seeing that you won. That was probably better than actually watching it.
Than
knowing
having
how it
to
happened.
Sit through that. Twitter was, or sorry, X was just fantastic.
I mean, it was
the
great.
Post on X.
It was great.
Something else. So I'll kind of start. Let's get some immediate reactions. Joe, how are you feeling at halftime when Alabama was tied 3-3 with a team that won one game last season?
No, listen, I will say that, I never legitimately thought Alabama was going to lose. For some reason, I just had in my mind they would actually win, even if it was going to be terrible. Yeah, I wasn't great though. That was probably the it was probably the worst game I'd seen Alabama play in the long, like, probably ever. But just the first half alone was awful. Like, this was, you know, potential worst half of college football this season by, like, any team, you know, respectful team. I mean, you know, outside of, like, Portland State, who was down, like, 100-0 to Oregon at halftime in week one. We probably were, like, just a little above that. But, yeah, it was awful. I mean, Tyler Bruckner obviously started and didn't provide much of anything. And Ty Simpson came in and technically did better. So
I will say, shout out Portland State, who beat North America 91-0.
Yeah, they did come back.
That was something.
They have a point differential of 2. Yeah, plus 2 now.
Was it 81-7 they lost to Oregon?
81-7, Oregon beat them, okay. And then they beat North America 91-0. Yeah.
And they lost that their second game. I can't remember what the score
to
was.
Wyoming, 31-17. Yeah. This is a Portland State podcast now.
Yeah. I mean, we might need to be one, you know.
True.
Kind of are, really, with this team.
But, yeah, okay, so this game... You know, I almost drove down there. I almost made the last-second decision to drive down there. I did not. You know, part of me kind of wishes I did. Maybe it would have been a little bit better luck. I don't know. But, you know, you finally saw – I know Tyler Booker was out, so that was one big thing on the offensive line. That's why the offensive line did look as bad as they did in this game. But they had already started looking bad against Texas. And, you know, me and Nick, we were up in the press box of Middle Tennessee State game. And, you know, we could see, you know, they weren't getting the push that we expected them to get, you know, early in, like, in the postseason with the way they were talking about how they, like, buffed up. Like, Chase McClellan had that one touchdown run, which helped out the average a little bit. But he got met in the backfield. He had to bounce it wide, go score. So you could already kind of seen the struggles of the offensive line. Then Tyler Booker's out. So that was a whole issue. And the quarterbacks did not really have time, like, even if they are able to read defenses, to actually have time to deliver accurate passes. Simpson looked a little bit better than Buckner did in this game. You know, just the way the ball was coming out of his hands, like, actually getting to the receivers. I know there was one out route that Buckner threw that, you know, he didn't get it as far deep that he should have, and the defensive back was able to tip it. They almost got an interception there. Really, the only bright spot for me in this game was the defense. You know, they only gave up 3 points, and that was after mm-hmm. the muff punt by Kool-Aid McKinstry. And the only reason we were tied at halftime was because Dallas Turner forced the fumble that let us get that field goal to tie it up at 3. So I really liked the way the defense played. Obviously, you know, they kind of got burned a little bit against Texas, but, you know, we had some, you know, some injuries going in that people didn't practice halfway through, and then we had some people actually get sick during the game and then on the field so long. And, you know, I'm glad that we won. Alabama won. I'm also glad that people saw this game, because all the people in class, on campus, on social media, who was saying the only issue was Jalen Milroe, finally saw that there's a lot more issues with this team.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, I'll admit, after that game against Texas, I was super critical of Milroe. And, you know, because I thought, personally, I still believe that if Milroe doesn't make one of those big mistakes, especially the one later in the game, that they had a real chance to win the game, not the kind of, you know, it felt like Texas was always going to win that game. After watching this game, my expectations dropped significantly. I would say that going after the Texas game, I said, okay, well, this team's ceiling is probably a 2-loss year, right? Because they have a lot of tough games coming up. We can talk about that. You know, they've got to go to Texas A&M. They're hosting Ole Miss at home. LSU's coming here. Tennessee's coming here. We have to go on the road for the Iron Bowl.
And I know Mississippi State did not look good against LSU, but on the road in Starkville, like, it's going to be loud. The cowbells. Kentucky. If we play like we did against South Florida, that's a very losable game.
Kentucky, yeah, on the road too. Yep.
So that was my big concern after this game. the ceiling might be 3 to 4 losses at this point. You know, maybe this is an overreaction. Maybe we look back at the end of the year when Alabama has somehow magically made it into the playoff. we look at this game and we say, what was going on?
Yeah. I do have a couple things. So one thing that was still bugging Alabama in this game was the penalties. With 2 more touchdowns called back, 4 penalties. Now that's 4 touchdowns on the year. So in Texas, we had 2 called back because of penalties. And I believe, me and Joe talked about last week, I believe one of those we still got a field goal. So that would have been 11 mm-hmm. points. We lost by 10. That's still a 1 point. Obviously, Texas wouldn't have just been trying to run out the clock at the end. So we don't know if they still win that game without those. But then 2 more called back, and one was the Terrion Arnold return, kickoff return that got called back. So that's 4 touchdowns so far called back because of penalties. And this is something that they said that they were addressing all offseason, was getting less penalties, but you're not really going to know until you're in the games. Now, like Nick was saying, maybe later in the season they've turned it around. They're looking like at least, you know, a respectable team, unlike they did this past Saturday. But they did say they said it, I think, at the end of the broadcast, where that was the least amount of points that Alabama scored against an unranked opponent since 2014. That 2014 game was at Arkansas, so it was at least an SEC opponent. Yeah. Arkansas, like, that was basically, you know, everybody talks about their Super Bowl. That was like their Super Bowl that year. They wore their 1966 throwback uniforms, and Alabama won 14-13. Landon Collins sealed the game with an interception late. So that team still went on to make the playoff. I believe the next week, I don't know if they had a bye week, but the next game was against Texas A&M, where Blake Sims had like the best game of his season and Alabama won by like 50 points. So maybe this team can turn around like that. It doesn't look very promising right now, you know, one day after the South Florida game and a week after the Texas loss. But maybe later in the season, it's kind of like that 2014 team where they are at least pushing for the playoff, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I just, like you said, the penalties, that's almost my main concern. And one big thing I will say is that all offseason, the thing that was preached is getting back to the Alabama standard. Watching this team in the first half, watching USF run it up the gut, I mean, Caleb Downs gets hit-sticked. It was all over Twitter. Those are things that you're not accustomed to seeing an Alabama team have to deal with, much less against a Group of Five team in South Florida. And not even a good Group of Five team. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe we look back at the end of the year and they're not that bad, but
South Florida's just in the playoff. We're like, well, actually, that was a pretty good win.
Like, when's the last time Alabama lost time of possession to a Group of Five team?
That's a great question.
You know what? It's probably like, I don't know. Like, it was probably because they actually would score so quickly mm-hmm. that they wouldn't have it. Like, that would probably be like the only time I would think.
Yeah. But in this one, it was like we just couldn't move the ball.
Yeah,
but this game, South Florida had 30 minutes, 26 seconds to Alabama's 29-34. And then penalties, we only had 5 in this game, but still 2 of those called back touchdowns.
Yeah, like, 2 of them. Mm-hmm. I mean.
And I almost wish there were more penalties, because then Ty Simpson wouldn't have been getting hit in the back, you know, when certain offensive linemen were missing blocks, like not even getting hands on people.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't even get a holding call on that one because you're not even trying.
So before we get a break, I want to go around. What would you say is the most concerning aspect of this game?
The offensive line, to be honest, just to me. I mean, like, you can look and say that, like, you know, Roydell Williams had a really good game on the ground, and that shows something, but quarterbacks are just getting hit way too much. I mean, I think, Adam, you said it earlier, like, even if these guys were able to make good throws, we would have never known, because they were getting blitzed and sacked, you know, and pressured, you know, half a second. So, like, and that's just something that, like, you know, if it happens against Texas, you're like, okay, you know, they have athletes, they have good players. But to have it happen against South Florida, it's just, like, that's like an embarrassing thing to have happen for Alabama, especially when they were hyped up as being this, like, oh, you know, they were like, oh, look how big they are. They're all, you know, 300 and something pounds. And I think they had it on the broadcast. They compared this offensive line to, like, the average NFL offensive line, and ours was, like, slightly bigger size-wise. And, like, and you just, like, are letting you know, these guys just get to your quarterback anyway. So that was the biggest concern for me.
Yeah. I also, you know, offensive line is a big issue. Even with Booker being out, they should be able to handle South Florida. I know a lot of guys on that line are kind of young. You know, Caden Proctor, he is a freshman, but he was the number one lineman coming out. And if we don't have anybody that's better than him with the way that he's played against South Florida and a little bit against Texas, mm-hmm. you know, that is an issue. But also, the play calling to me hasn't really been that good, especially considering we didn't against Texas. There wasn't a whole lot to do with like read options or design quarterback runs that you would expect when you have a guy like Milroe in. And then on the first drive, I know he didn't look great, but they actually gave Buckner like some read option plays, or at least plays that look like read option. They might have been designed runs with the running back, but at least giving that read option look, you know, could pause some people on the defense if you had Milroe back there. So, you know, not a huge fan of the play calling or the offensive line, but also if the offensive line isn't blocking, maybe you're like, what plays can I call? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, in Tommy Reese's defense, I mean, it's very difficult to call plays when A, your offensive line can't block anything, mm-hmm. and two, when you don't. Every week we've been rotating quarterbacks, and I'll talk about this more in the second segment, but I mean the quarterback carousel is spinning because they yeah. I mean, this was worst case scenario for Alabama.
I was kind of waiting for like Lonergan to get in there at a certain point.
Even Holstein was down there dressed
Holstein
out,
yeah know? Like I was really hoping for anybody,
and I'll hit on more of that in the second segment. But for me, the biggest problem was this team didn't come out ready to play at all. I mean, this is a team that lost week two to Texas. They came here and dominated Alabama. It never looked really, in my opinion, it never looked like Alabama had a real, real shot to win the game. And then this team comes out, and they just come out completely flat. I mean, credit to the defense. 3 points. This game was very, very losable. Joe said earlier that he never saw a chance when South Florida could have won this game. I'm going to be completely honest. Until, like, the very last drive of the game, I was extremely worried. I was like, this is a losable game because, I mean, it's 3-3 going in the half. They just didn't come out ready to play at all. I mean, Buckner looked horrible, and Saban says after the game, you know, they played the guys that practiced the best all week. If that performance that we got from Buckner was the best performance all week in practice, and I understand game time, like jitters, you know, you're on the road, it's your first start at Alabama. I mean, this is a guy that started at Notre Dame. Let's just remember that. He was not great at Notre Dame, but this is a guy who has started college football games before.
He started at Notre Dame against Ohio State.
Exactly. I think this is a different caliber of opponent here.
Yeah.
So this is super concerning for me how weak the offense looked when they came out. They just looked like they weren't ready to play, and you should be extremely hyped up after you lose in week two to Texas on a very mm-hmm. close game. So that's going to do it for us here in the first segment. We'll be back in about 5 minutes here on 90.7 The Capstan.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, everybody, here to the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. Nicholas, Joe, and Adam talking Alabama versus South Florida. Just to step away from that for a second, two notes. A, great weekend of college football. And B, how about them Cowboys? All right.
Yeah, Zach Wilson. Boy, man.
Hey, he didn't look that bad. He did not look that bad. Now, granted, should the Jets go find somebody else immediately? Absolutely.
I mean, all I'm saying is Joe Flacco's free agent.
Man, no comment.
I don't know, yeah.
So, I think the biggest thing coming out of this Alabama South Florida game is that the quarterback carousel is on an all time. I mean, this thing is going super fast. I said before this week, I think maybe I had. I can't remember who I'd said it to. Maybe it was Joe. I talked about how the worst case scenario coming out of this game was that A, you didn't decide to start Milroe. B, the quarterback who you started came out and looked like absolute trash.
Yep.
And then you had to bring somebody else in. Alabama has played three completely different quarterbacks, and I'm not sure that any of them have looked great. One thing I will say, I think we gave Milroe too hard of a time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it was definitely like I think there was like a bit of judgment going on, because I think there were a lot of fans who saw Milroe, and he's like struggled against Texas. Like, it's not like he was like a great, you know, he didn't have a great game against Texas, but just I think a lot of people were expecting like Buckner, who transferred in from Notre Dame, or Ty Simpson, who was a really highly touted prospect, to be better. And I just I think people kind of factored in that you know, there's just no, you know, they're just not, you know, and Simpson actually probably looked, I mean, he was better than Buckner yesterday, but like, he still shouldn't start over Milroe. But I think there was like a little bit of a notion that Milroe wasn't the best guy to begin with, when, and you know, whether for good or bad, he was. So
yeah. I'm wondering how fast the rest of the average fan is going to say, you know, we should just put in the freshman. You know, we'll see how this Ole Miss game goes, but y'all know how I feel about Milroe. If you read my article, you know, I think I thought after game one, you know, he was the best guy from the job. Obviously, I didn't see the other guys. Watching this game kind of solidified that for me. Even if he's not the best quarterback that we've ever had, obviously, you know, he's not Bryce Young. He's not a Heisman Trophy winner. He's not Mac Jones. He's not Tua. He's not Jalen Hurts. You know, he's not any of those guys that we've been spoiled with. And I know when Jalen, you know, there was some games where he didn't really look that good, and that's why, you know, Tua had to come in. And you know, Jalen and all of those guys are starting in the NFL now, right? We don't have, at least right now, I mean, I know Milroe's a redshirt sophomore, everybody else is young. We don't have a guy that you're like, yeah, that guy's going to start on Sundays. But I think with Milroe, with his ability, even with Booker being out, I think Milroe made us look better on the offensive line, because he was able to just take off and run past everybody. Mm. Occasionally, he still got sacked five times against Texas, so I think he should start against Ole Miss. Now, if he doesn't start, like if the coaching staff, or maybe this week in practice he's still not good, if they decide they want to go with Simpson or Buckner, I think they would choose Simpson over Buckner right now, just going off the previous game. I think you have to at least have a package for Milroe to bring him in, or get him on the field at the same time as another quarterback, to where you can then have all these different plays, all these trick plays, maybe just as a decoy, but like you would have the option to do things that could keep the defense off balance so they can't just, you know, straight rush the quarterback. Now, we don't know what will happen. We don't know. I mean, Tommy Rees at our coordinator media days that I was at, he said he wasn't going to call the same plays that he did at Notre Dame because he had different athletes. So far, he's not really calling plays to his athletes, like what they can do, in my opinion. Now, we'll see what happens. Ole Miss is going to be a tough game. I wish we did not play Ole Miss this week, but that's how the schedule is. We'll see.
Well, to be fair, like, I mean, we barely beat South Florida, so, like, who would we have played this week?
Maybe we have Chattanooga now instead of, you know, right before.
I don't know.
Might be a tough game. We need to wait.
The moccasins are good, bro. Don't disrespect the mocks.
Here's one thing that I'll say. Man, that was rough watch from Buckner. I mean, dude looked like he was throwing a shot put out there. I mean, it was when I was very concerned when the first drive ended on him throwing a pass behind a receiver.
Yeah.
That was very telling for me. Not the inspiring start that you really want. Also, an aside, if Milroe doesn't end up being the guy for this team this year, right? If they decide that maybe Simpson is a better quarterback, gives them a better passing attack, right? Yeah,
just from reading the defense.
Not using Milroe at all is unbelievably dumb, in my opinion. I mean, the dude is an athlete. You cannot tell me that you cannot figure out a way to play him. Like, at all.
Well, like, you've seen, you know, obviously the running ability. We saw that last year. We saw this year. And he's got a cannon. He was on pace, you know, before he didn't start in this, he was on pace to have 42 completions of over 20 yards in the air. Bryce Young only had, I think, 21 last year. So he was going to double up that, which kind of shows you maybe Bill O'Brien should have thrown the ball downfield a little bit more. But, you know, I'm a fan. Have a package for him, kind of like how they did before Tebow was a starter at Florida. I'm not saying he's Tebow, but, you know, you can always get him in somehow, if not in a different position, just a different package. I also saw a play from Oklahoma when they had, I believe it was Kyler Murray there. He handed off to the running back, and then it was an option with the running back able to pitch it back to Kyler Murray. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if we could use that play. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, like, why do they not use Milroe like the Saints have used Taysom Hill? Like, it fits the exact like description of what you're looking for, that kind of Swiss Army knife player that you can send out there. It would be a travesty that if you decide not to have him be the starter, that he's not playing at all. Like, him not playing, not seeing the field against South Florida is unbelievable, because you talked about how Tommy Rees said that, you know, he's calling plays differently here than at Notre Dame because he has different athletes. Jalen Milroe should be like the number one guy on athletes on this team. I will say Simpson looked pretty good near the end of the game. He did a good job of managing the game. He was that game manager. He didn't make those big mistakes that Milroe did. And I think that possibly that could be the reason that he gets to start against Ole Miss.
I did. I went back and I watched that Texas game. And in the first, like on those two interceptions, he doesn't look at anybody else. The first one was a little bit faster. It was a little bit faster of a pass. I don't know if he was told, like, hey, it's going to be open, just throw it. I hope he wasn't told that. But, you know, he hasn't shown the ability to actually read the field. The second one, it was a little bit longer. You know, it was a deeper route, and you know, this, I don't think he even saw the safety coming over. But maybe if Simpson has that better ability to read the defense, maybe he starts. But like we've been saying, you know, get him in the game somehow. You know, somehow get him the ball. But also, I'm sure you've seen it on social media. I saw it during the game, and then obviously everybody's been talking about it today. He did not play at all. Jalen Miller did not play at all against South Florida. It looked like he was warming up a little bit, but he wasn't really throwing like he was actually going to get in. You know, he's just over there going through the motions kind of. And Ty Simpson goes in, leads that touchdown drive. Jalen Milroe goes out in the field. He's greeting every single offensive player off, and then he's pumping up Ty Simpson when he comes off, even embraces him in a hug like right before they go to the sideline. Buckner was nowhere to be found. I don't know if he was still on the sideline, maybe, you know, congratulating them when they came off. But Jalen Milroe was, like, on the field, like, greeting everybody. Like, he's kind of showing that leadership ability that I had seen, you know, in the press conference that he was in and then in the Middle Tennessee State game. Now, if he could improve on, you know, reading a defense, maybe he could be the star. We don't know. We'll see what happens. But I did like that. You know, he wasn't just a guy on the sideline like, you know, I'm not getting in. I'm not even going to, you know, do anything today.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, I think that Milroe, you know, is obvious that he is this kind of freak of nature athletically, and it's just, I mean, you know, we've kind of said it, like, you know, reading a defense, to be honest, might not even matter if you only have 2 seconds to throw.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if you try them out there, and I think he, like, you know, I'm not, he doesn't read a defense great, and he didn't do it against Texas, but, you know, when given kind of the very easy, simple plays to kind of get his mojo up. I think those deep shots, I mean, you know, one of his best throws against Texas was that ball to give them the lead. Middle Tennessee State, they were able to do it a couple times, albeit against, you know, for a weaker opposition, where they would have, you know, check down here, a dump off here, or, you know, just easy, quick completions, and then you go 40 yards, you know, down the field and can get a touchdown on it. And I just didn't – I mean, they didn't even really try that, any of that. Not that – I mean, Buckner, like, couldn't complete a screen pass.
They had the one deep pass, I believe, if Simpson was in the game at that point, that was just out of the reach of Burton. You might not be able to see it because the camera was so far away.
That's true, yeah. But, no, I mean, like, it's just I don't think – to be honest, I mean, you know, they just have to get these guys in somewhat of rhythm. I think they tried to get Buckner in a rhythm, and he was just flat out missing people. So yeah, and I think Simpson was a little better, but, you know, albeit kind of like a different type of player there. And I think Milroe, when they were actually got him in rhythm and gave him some sort of confidence throwing the ball, I mean, that just seemed like a totally different team, you know, against even against Texas when they were struggling.
Yeah. Here's one thing I would like to see more of, you know, going forward, like whoever the quarterback is, you know. We have shown, I know we talked about it last year, how we didn't really have anybody that could beat anybody over the top. Well, we've seen Jermaine Burton, at least now, has the ability to get past defenders. Like, we have at least one guy, and I know Kobe Prentice, Isaiah Bond, they can probably do it too, Ja'Cory Brooks maybe, but, you know, we at least have guys that have been able to catch the ball deep. So I like the deep passes. We've shown that we can do that, but we haven't really used the tight ends a whole lot, and I know we had the one touchdown from Amari Nyblack against Texas, and then we had one C.J. Dupree. You know, he had the one catch like 45 yards in this past game. He didn't have another catch in the game, but, you know, he was a transfer out of Maryland, and, you know, I think we should look to have more tight end involvement. I mean, that was kind of something that you saw from Tommy Rees at Notre Dame was tight end involvement, and you haven't seen it here yet, other than, you know, a couple passes a game. Maybe we kind of see that more going forward.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think they have to. I mean, Nyback played really well. I can't remember which game it was, but I believe he had over 100 receiving yards. It was probably against Middle Tennessee, to be honest, but. You know, like he's shown really good play, and Dupree was pretty good at Maryland, and, you know, I don't know if Tommy Rees just has the confidence in these guys to have, you know, to try to run that system, because you got to remember he was throwing the tight ends at Notre Dame, and the last one he threw to is now in the NFL, so, you know, I mean, it's kind of a different ball game, but yeah.
Here's one thing I'll say. I was a little confused with how quickly Milroe was dismissed as an option at QB1. Because during this game, pregame, he was shown taking snaps from the third team center. So it looks like he was third string on the depth chart this week, behind Buckner, behind Ty Simpson, which I don't really understand how that happens, how you go from first string to third string over the course of a week. Maybe that quarterback battle was a lot closer initially than we really thought. And obviously it's still going on. But Saban said after the game, he said somebody had asked him about why he picked, you know, Simpson to go in and why Milroe stayed on the bench. And he talked about it being an internal team thing, which this could be completely false. This is complete speculation for me. It reads to me like something happened, like some internal team thing happened, because I just don't see how a guy like Milroe, who has that experience starting, I mean, it's not like he completely threw the game against Texas away. I mean, he had some good moments. He definitely looked a lot better than Buckner did.
He still had 255 passing yards against Texas, and Texas has a pretty good defense. So,
and against that strong of an opponent, I mean, you know, now it almost looks foolish to have benched him, because you could have used this week against USF as a type of get-right game to help him start reading the defenses better, to give him some things to work on. But instead, you started Buckner, so Simpson comes into the week thinking he's the backup. Simpson gets to come in, but then they're not really throwing it a lot. They threw it quite a bit with Buckner.
Yeah.
They weren't throwing it a lot with Simpson once he came in.
He ended up 5 of 9, so only 9 passing.
Yeah, attempts. They transitioned back to their running game, which, granted, helped them win the game. Roydell Williams, Jace McClellan were both fantastic in this game. You know, as good as you can be against USF, especially considering how bad the offensive line is right now. I thought that was really good. But I just don't understand what happened.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, I do wonder if there was something that behind the scenes we didn't see, you know, like whether, I mean, because I would imagine, you know, it seems like, you know, Buckner was probably the guy all week, you know, or at least him and Simpson. So like maybe it was like an attitude thing, you know, from Milroe that maybe he didn't kind of take it the way he did. But yeah, I mean, I just it was kind of surprising that, especially with how struggle, you know, with how much, how big the offense was struggling Saturday, that he even, like, he never even got, like, a look, despite being your guy.
Yeah, I will say, I kind of left out the second part of that quote. Maybe this gives a little more context to it. Saban, I'll read the full quote now. I think that that's an internal team thing. I think that everyone has the opportunity to respond in the right way when things don't go exactly like you want them to. That seems like maybe the response after Texas was not quite what it should have been. And you heard a lot of things leading after that game. A lot of players talking about how the practices heading into the Texas game weren't as good as they should have been. But, you know, we preached all offseason that the whole point of the year was getting back to the Alabama standard. Now, they might actually end up having to turn back to the old Alabama game plan of just letting your defense carry you, running the ball, and only throwing the ball 20 times a game. But the other half of that Alabama standard is not having touchdowns called back by penalties. Yeah. And, you know, everybody practicing hard, guys coming out with the right attitude. It's just concerning.
We'll see how it goes. You know, Ole Miss this week, it's going to be tough. You know, Pete Colding's the defense coordinator, so we know him. He knows us. Maybe, you know, I don't know. We know how we feel about Pete Colding. We talked about it, you know, a lot. But, you know, we don't know how it's going to be in this game. We don't know how our offense is going to play. We don't know, you know, if the line's going to be healthy, if they're actually going to be blocking. All I know is that watching the games, our offenses look better than Milroe. Now, maybe it wouldn't have mattered against South Florida. We obviously don't know what happened in practice. We don't know if it was something mental, like after that game. Maybe he was blaming himself for the loss. I mean, if you heard what people have been saying around campus, if they're saying it to his face, you know, you can just imagine what kind of, like, thought process you would be going into practice every day, you know, thinking that you let the whole, you know, university, state, fan base down, like everything. And, you know, maybe he just wasn't practicing well. Maybe, you know, maybe this week is better. We don't know. But look, watching that South Florida game, you know, you would at least expect, you know, to see, you know, the offense have, you know, the quarterbacks back. And it just didn't look like anybody really cared out there, you know. And I don't know if it was, you know, something that the offense, maybe they don't like the other quarterback. I don't know. I don't want to say that, like, for sure. But there's the one clip that you see on Twitter where Caden Proctor misses his block, Ty Simpson gets sacked, and then Proctor doesn't even try to help up Simpson. So what is going on in the locker room? Like, I think there's a lot of improvements that need to be made.
Yeah.
Very true. So we'll go around real quickly. Who starts the game against Ole Miss? Ole Miss, Alabama is currently an 11-point favorite. I don't understand how in the world they are a favorite at all against Ole Miss right now. I understand that I think Alabama is 13th and Ole Miss is 15th in the rankings. It seems to me like this game should be a lot closer on the line, but Joe, who do you have starting against Ole Miss?
Jalen Milroe. I think he gives Alabama his best shot. He's actually started games, you know, and played well in them, so I think it's going to be Milroe.
I would say Milroe as well. They're still, it's not going to be Tyler Buchner. I would say Milroe or Simpson. I would lean Milroe just from how they've looked with him in the game.
Yeah. I'll make a correction. The line opened at Ole Miss was favored, or sorry, Alabama was favored by 11. It looks like Alabama is favored by 6.5 now. For me, it's Milroe. Your O-line is terrible as of right now. Now, granted, they could have made some big improvements. Saban said after the game that Proctor plays a lot. It seems like Booker helps Proctor out a lot out there. That at least that's what Saban said. So possibly getting him back this week could be a big deal in helping that O-line kind of gel. You would hope to see a lot of improvement in that area against Ole Miss, because you can't run the ball if your O-line's not doing well, much less throw passes as a quarterback. I think for that reason, since your O-line is so bad, it has to be Milroe. Because really, I mean, if your first read's not there, are you even going to have time to get to the second read? If your O-line can't block anybody, I mean, they can't block against... against USF, I mean, I'd hate to see what Ole Miss is going to do, much less some of the Georgia. You know,
I will say going forward, just like nobody has looked like the best team in the nation, really. I mean, you know, Georgia's looked okay, but everybody's had their struggles. No team on Alabama's schedule, like, really scares me. It's how does Alabama play against those teams? So with Ole Miss this week, their last two games. So they had Mercer week one. They won 73-7. At Tulane, they won 37-20. It was a very close game until later in the second half, and Tulane had their backup quarterback in. They also gave up 23 to Georgia Tech. So, you know, maybe. I mean, our offense got to improve a lot over the week, but, you know, every game's winnable. Every game's losable. We'll see what's going on.
Very true. You never know what to expect.
No, exactly.
One final closing thought before we head into the break, before our last segment. This season should make everyone appreciate Bryce Young that much more. I mean, imagine what last year's team – we thought that last year's O-line was bad. Imagine what that team last year looks like without Bryce Young.
Yeah. I will say that that's actually a really good point. I don't want to get on this too much because we got to go to break. But, like, I do think people looked at last year and thought that, oh, like, that's the lowest. And then like, if you really think about it, like – probably like a good like 80% of the production offensively, probably like a good like 60% from Bryce Young, and, you know, a couple receivers left, offensive linemen left. Like, there's really like no experience on this team. Like, if you know, like, Jalen Milroe started one game coming into the season. The running back room, which has been kind of bad for about 2-3 years now, inconsistent. You know, like, Roydell Williams hasn't really had this level of production and workload. There hasn't really been a receiver that's been on this roster outside of Ja'Cory Brooks, who just has not played. So, I mean, really, like, the offense has, like, no returning production last year to this year, and I think that it's very evident, especially in games like this when, you know, like, I would imagine at the end of the first quarter last year, if Alabama was down to USF, like, Bryce Young probably rallies the troops, and it's like 23-3 at halftime, or, you know, 20-3 at halftime, and the game's out of reach by the fourth quarter. You know, it just shows that this team just does not have that on the offensive side. I think they have a couple of guys on defense that can do that, but it's a struggle for the offense.
And maybe that's just an expectation thing on our part.
That's true.
Reminder, we're not just a football show much as we probably seem like one. We're going to have some better Alabama news when we come back from break here on 90.7 Capstan.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hopes, especially with Cannon Claycomb coming back for that graduate year, and Nick Dunlap, who is just a star in the making. On the PGA Tour, Ryder Cup's coming up. Justin Thomas getting a little tune-up in at the Fortinet Championship. He's finished his final round, even par 72, not what he was hoping for, but it looks like he's going to finish in about fifth, or a tie for fifth. So not a bad result for somebody who had completely lost his game there for a little bit. So exactly what you want to see heading into the Ryder Cup. Adam, I think you got soccer.
Yeah, I got some soccer updates for you. So this week, Alabama had two games. They had their first game of their SEC schedule on Thursday when they faced number 23 Georgia. Ended in another tie, 1-1. Gianna Paul scored within the first 4 minutes of the game, and then they could not score the rest of the time. There was, late in the game, what looked to be a handball to everybody in the stands. Wasn't called, ends up being a tie. That makes it 4 out of the last 5 games in ties. They did play Mercer today, so this was kind of their get-right game, I guess you would say. They beat Mercer 5-1 on the road, and Gianna Paul opens the scoring. That's her 7th goal of the year. Felicia Knox also scored. Then we had 3 players with their first goals of the season. Leia Kundi, the junior, with one in the 29th minute, and then 2 freshmen, Cameron Silva and Nadia Ramadan, got it in the 45th minute, and then they won 5-1. Like I said, they will go back to SEC play this week. They travel to Arkansas Thursday, and then they'll play Vanderbilt on Sunday. Arkansas was the preseason pick to win the SEC. They have lost two games so far, so they're 5-2-1, and there's only been two like opponents. So they did play Tennessee. They won 3-1. Alabama played Tennessee, but it was an exhibition. It wasn't part of the regular season. And then they both played North Carolina. They had to travel to Chapel Hill and lost 3-1. Alabama, of course, had Chapel Hill in Tuscaloosa and tied 1-1. So it'll be very interesting to see how that game turns out. They were picked 1-2. Arkansas picked to win the SEC. Alabama picked to finish second. So we'll see. This will be a huge matchup in Fayetteville on Thursday.
Yeah, a lot of draws for soccer recently. So I'm glad to see them kind of start putting them in the back of the net and have a big game. This feels like it could be a turning point for the rest of the season. Yeah.
Just seeing it get to the back of the net, you know, that could do wonders for you down the road. You know, now you know you can score. And Gianna Paul, 7 goals in the year so far. You know, we talked about last week how I was looking for her to step up, and she scored in the last 3 games. So
she heard us.
Yeah. Maybe she was listening. Also, did you want to get volleyball? Or?
I can do it, yeah. Let's do volleyball. Yeah, so Alabama, pretty successful week in what's already kind of turning into a rather successful season for them. 10-1 on the year. Mind you, they only won 10 total games last year. So
They're not even to SEC play yet.
No, they're not. They're 10-1.
Second year for Coach Reed. She's turning it around.
she has got them cooking right now. They had, a little interesting game against Troy. Started the game, they took the first set, and Troy is 1-8, or they were when they played Alabama, and Troy then took the next two. Alabama won the fourth set, and then took the fifth set, 15-9. Kendall Rowe had 16 kills to lead the team. Aaliyah Wells had 10. Chase Campbell had 9, and Micah Grinowitz also had 9 to help kind of propel the Tide to a little comeback from behind victory against in-state rivals Troy. And then they had a home game yesterday in the midst of Alabama's offense struggling on the football field. They did not struggle against Grambling State on the volleyball court. Swept them 3-0 clean sweep. Again, Kendall Rowe, who I think I've said every single volleyball game, she has led the game in kills. She, again, led them with 13. Micah Grinowitz had 11. Aaliyah Wells with 9. And Chase Campbell with 6. Alabama took the first set 25-18, 25-17 in the second set, and then 25-15 in the third set. Grambling State they're now 2-11. Alabama swept them and, come into SEC play red hot.
With SEC play, it is going to be, a little bit tougher than the teams they've been playing. There are multiple ranked teams in the SEC. Last year, they did not do very well in the SEC. They had only won, I think, 4 matches in the SEC last season. But, this year, they have 10 wins. That matches the total from last year. So it's already, if you lose out, you had the same record. So that's good to know.
Only up from here.
Yeah. So, even if it's going to be very tough, I'm hoping, they can get some upsets here. They have this week at Ole Miss and at Mississippi State. We'll see what happens. And then the week after, October 1st, Kentucky comes in, and hopefully we can get a big crowd for that one.
Yeah, and especially just looking at this, this year to last year, just the teams that they lost to last year. Obviously, they lost to Oregon State and Houston, which no shame there. But they lost games to Green Bay, Ball State, Louisiana, TCU got them 3-1. That was a match right before SEC play, or 2 matches before. So just going in with momentum and actually beating the teams they're supposed to is huge for them.
Yeah, so any parting thoughts, any last hopes?
I'm waiting for the Alabama football team to tweet out the open quarterback tryouts. I'm waiting for that to happen.
Are you signing up? Are you headed out there?
I don't got much eligibility left.
Oh.
So
yeah, well,
if they need me Saturday, maybe, but next season I'm I'm out. So
you know, we might, you know, the whole Texas A&M thing, you know, the 12th man, they brought the guy out of the stands. I believe he was still like on like the practice squad or whatever. But anyway, if they need somebody on Saturday against Ole Miss, just pull one of us out of the stands, pull Nick out of the press box. You know, he'll be glad to go down there.
You know, I can only throw the ball about 20 yards, but, you know, that check down champion.
Yeah, yeah, just simple plays.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us, folks, this week on the Low Tide. Join us again, same time next week here on 90.7 The Capstone. Thank you for listening.